Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 39. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Hello.
And we're a little bit late. Apologies for that.
My fault. It was me this time.
We're just a touch late getting these up for we watched a couple movies for Pride Month. We're going to talk about them. I probably did Pride Month very dirty. But before we get into the two that we're going to pit head to head, we've been watching some other stuff. Jeff, what have you been watching?
Well, I've actually seen some of the big new movies that are in theaters and stuff, but I want to talk about some random shit this month.
All right.
But we'll start off with two new TV shows. We'll start off with HBO's The Idol.
All right.
Which was, this was their big new Sunday night show after Succession and Barry ended. And it was not met with a lot of enthusiasm, I don't think.
No, people seem to hate it.
Yes. I think it got a lot of, it did numbers for them. I think people were watching it,
mm-hmm.
but hate watching it. Critics did not like it. And it's a new show from Sam Levinson, he did the movie Assassination Nation, and more recently he had the really popular HBO show Euphoria.
Yep.
I really like this guy's directing and style, and so I'm in for whatever he wants to do. And the idea, at least in part here, was a kind of trashy, erotic thriller type show that centered on this, Britney Spears pop star, and this bad guy that she gets involved with, played by The Weeknd. This show had a troubled production. Sam Levinson, the director, he was not the original creator of the show, but the original creator, she got fired or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The Weeknd insisted his part be much bigger, and he becomes a big main character of the show. And for the most part, I was pretty defensive about the show. I thought it was pretty entertaining, and I thought a lot of the talk on Twitter was making fun of how bad The Weeknd is in it. I thought he was good. I thought he was really good in it.
I have not seen it yet. It's 5 episodes, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I think that might be it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but my impression of them was that they didn't like The Weeknd's performance, but they also didn't get his character. And it was I don't know, he seems he's designed to be this bad guy.
people thought, his acting was bad, and they just didn't buy him as this tough guy, scary dude. I kind of did, but then, there's parts about it that, if you just show a clip out of context, it's really laughable.
Right.
And people did not seem to get that, that was intentional. That's the character is ultimately a fraud. He's a guy that wants to be in the music industry, but he has no actual talent.
Right.
He's kind of a cult leader type. And The Weeknd was also very defensive. He's very online on Twitter, watching what people are saying. And, he'd be like, no, it was supposed to be I was supposed to come off like that. And people were just I don't know, could not get that or did not care. They still thought he was terrible. I thought he was good in it. It's 5 episodes, and I was pretty entertained, especially through the first 3, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Where's this going? This is gonna have some crazy violent ending, and what's gonna happen? Then the last episode happened, episode 5. And that might be one of the worst episodes of TV I've seen in years. So I spent all this time, a month, defending the show, only to kind of end up where everyone else was, which was, this was a giant waste of time.
Bad endings can do that.
Spoil
a lot of other stuff.
It's baffling. Because, I was like, I know where this is going. This is going where, the music industry, they're the real sharks, and they're going to swallow this guy up and kick him out and steal all his talent and the music that he helped her write, and he's going to be left with nothing. And it kind of does that. And I was like, it's kind of like, you know, what I saw coming, but it makes sense. I get like the point you're trying to make here. Then comes the last 10 minutes, and it's borderline incoherent. Like, I just was like, what were you trying to say with this? I get today, this is a pretty big misfire from Sam Levinson. But you got new music every week, new songs from The Weeknd every week. It was entertaining along the way, but it ultimately added up to nothing. So that was the idol. I stupidly defended it week to week, and then I ended up hating it just as bad as everyone else. I mean, it's a bad ending. It's terrible.
I still want to watch it.
Yeah, curious. Yeah.
I like The Weeknd. I like his music. I kind of like the idea of a trashy, like,
Yeah.
thriller, so.
Yeah, and I do think Sam Levinson is a good director. I just would, you know, I would say watch Euphoria or something. But another TV show I thought was really, really good, and this is going to come as no surprise to you, is The Bear, which came back for its second season in June. Have you gotten? You watched season one of The
I
Bear,
did
right?
watch season one. I liked it a lot. I've not gotten to season two, and I'm actually kind of disappointed that the season one they put out like week to week.
I don't
Like
think they
it,
did.
I thought I was. I
I think I
could have.
watched it in like a day.
Okay, maybe that was just how I watched it, and
Yeah.
I was watching along with some other people that were doing it that way, as opposed to they definitely did just dump all what 10 episodes of season two out. Yeah.
The show should be weekly. People would be talking about some of the. I mean, there's two episodes this
Yeah.
season that people are not gonna stop talking about, but like, it would have landed so much harder if that was the one episode you could see that week.
Yeah, I think like it's one of those things where like when season two hit, everyone was like kind of, and maybe what happened last with season one, Jeff, was that it took a while for it to catch on.
Yeah, it
So
was big word of mouth.
there was more talk about it over time, and but then this one came out and I saw people talking about it for like a week and a half, and then it's like on to whatever the next new thing is.
It sucks because there's not a lot else
Yeah.
out to watch. I think they somehow topped themselves. I think that this season
Okay.
is even better, which is weird because I had some hesitation about it. Because the idea of season one was like, hey, we're gonna do a Chicago Italian beef place, but we're gonna like re do it right, do it really good. But if you remember, at the end of that season, they found a bunch of money, and they're like, we're gonna close the restaurant and reopen it as like kind of a fine dining thing, which to me is like, at least initially, I was like, that's a little bit like closing down this awesome place so that you could open up, you know, the menu. Like the movie, The Menu, like,
And you're risking changing the vibe of everything. Like it's
yeah,
like going from the high speed action of like a corner store beef place to a high end restaurant is completely different. Like the kitchen's still kind of the same, but
and I'll
different
say
vibe.
this: the season is them preparing to open this restaurant.
So they haven't that it was just like them putting it all together. Okay.
But man, one thing they do with the fine dining aspect that, you know, again, because I think some of those Michelin star, like the food to me looks like not amazing. Like, but they, one aspect they touched on with the fine dining that I really appreciated and like really like got me good emotionally is like, you study your customers before you come in. You're going to know something about them and you're going to surprise them in some way. And that part was really good and really special in the season. I don't want to like spoil it, but like that comes into play. And then there's two episodes. There's episode six and episode seven that I think they're are the best in the series so far. Episode six is a Christmas episode, a Christmas dinner episode where you get to see more of the main guy's family. And it is one of the most upsetting episodes of television I've ever seen. Like, incredibly intense and just puts you through the ringer. And reminded me of dysfunctional family Christmases of my own. I was not prepared for that. And some really cool like guest stars in that episode. And episode seven, the one that I think is my favorite episode of the entire series, is Richie, you know, the asshole cousin.
Yeah.
He has to go work for a week in a fine dining restaurant working on cleaning the forks. I won't say anything any more about that, but it is my favorite episode. Oh, I'll say one more thing about that. The episode uses the music from Thief, the movie we reviewed last month.
Okay.
Which is pretty neat. It doesn't, like, call it out in any sort of, you know, the music, you know. But yeah, the bear, I really love season two. I don't know how they managed to pull that off. It seems like something that was impossible to pull off. And I got two movies for you, Chris, and these are random as can be.
All right.
A couple weeks ago on Joe Bob, on The Last Drive-In, they featured a TV movie. It was a horror movie that aired on CBS like a week before Halloween in 1981.
Okay.
It's called Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. Have you ever heard of this movie?
Absolutely not.
Okay. No. I thought it was one pretty neat that they would choose a TV movie. I'm like, that's out thinking outside of the box. I haven't considered that for this show. but it's also widely regarded as one of the best TV movies ever made. And I gotta tell you, Chris, it's pretty good. It's got, you know, it doesn't have any gore or anything because, you know, it was a
4TV. Yeah. In like the 80s, right?
Yeah, but it has some chills and atmosphere and a good story. And what it is basically like this, you know, town idiot, like village idiot type character played by Larry Drake. It's like a situation where he hangs out with a little girl and people in the town don't like it. The little girl ends up getting hurt and a mob comes after him and kills him. This is like all the first 10 minutes. So no huge spoilers. But then the people that were in the mob, the people that killed him, they start seeing like the scarecrow that's stalking them. It's really neat. Like it's really and like you, as you're watching, you're like, is it just their guilt that they're seeing the scarecrow? Or is there really like, is he come back as like a slasher killer? Like what's going on here? And you know, kind of plays with you on that for the whole movie. And one of the mobs, like one of the main characters in the mob, is this fucking evil, crazy male man. So I certainly enjoyed that part of it. It's worth checking out. I think it's like available on everything for free. Like you can watch it on Prime, Tubi, whatever.
Okay,
it's on Shudder. And last, and just, again, humor me, is a movie called At Any Price, which was shot where I live, in the town where I live, in 2011. It stars Dennis Quaid and Zac Efron. And it takes place in Iowa, but I don't understand why they didn't just set it here in DeKalb, because it's a story about a corn farmer, and that is what DeKalb is like mostly known for is corn. So I don't know why they felt the need to like, because you know they did have to like change signs and stuff to like say like road signs to make it look like it was Iowa. And I was
Iowa.
You could have literally changed nothing about the script and just set it, you know, just set it where it was shot, and it would have been fine. But you know, my reason for watching this was just curiosity at like, you know, what places would I see that I know? And there was a bunch. It was really interesting to watch. Like, there's a church that's on my route that's in the movie. There's a diner that I've eaten at a bunch. I won't eat there anymore because it's disgusting. But there's like several scenes in this diner. There's scenes at the Speedway that's like one town over. There's even like a part where like a character goes up to somebody's house and throws a rock at their house. And because I'm so familiar with the ins and outs of this town, I saw the address number on the house and I was able to figure out what street it was in, you know. So that was really neat. The movie itself is actually pretty good too. Like, it's a slow burn. It's not like a super exciting movie. It's about Dennis Quaid is this corn farmer who is like hourly, like this aw shucks farmer type.
Mm-hmm.
But beneath that surface is someone who is like absolutely like a ruthless businessman and will do anything to survive. And it's kind of a drama of like him trying to keep his farm afloat, and his son, played by Zac Efron, doesn't want to like follow in his father's footsteps. He wants to be a race car driver, and it seems like a normal like slice of life, small town drama thing for a lot of it. And the one criticism I would put towards it is it's kind of slow. Like it's slow building, but you have some good actors in it. You have Maika Monroe from It Follows and The Guest. She's Zac Efron's girlfriend in it. So it might have been one of her very first roles. But she's in it a lot. Heather Graham's in it quite a bit. So that was all interesting. And again, me getting to see like spot stuff, like recognize stuff.
Yeah, that's neat.
But the last half hour, I thought was pretty riveting. It goes pretty like. It's pretty dark, I'll put it that way. I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. That's again, this is a movie that I don't think anybody has seen or heard of, but I heard of it because I was talking to one of my coworkers and I was telling him about The Bear, and I was like, it makes me tear up when I see Chicago, because I'm like, it's just like the way they represent that Chicago in that show is just so beautiful. And my coworker's like, I like to think that's how I feel about that DeKalb movie. And I was like, DeKalb movie? Because this was like shot like a year or two before I moved out here, so like I was not in the loop when it was
Yeah.
being shot here. And so that's how I like heard of it, and of course I saw it was on Hulu, and I was like, I'm gonna give this a watch, and ended up liking it.
Roger Ebert evidently liked it quite a
He
bit
loved
too.
it. He loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some random recommendations for you, Chris. You aren't gonna hear those on other shows.
I don't think so. No. All right. Well, I'll do a threesome here. Real quick, Mission Impossible opens tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, by the time this comes out, it will be out in the wild, and people have seen it. I have not seen Dead Reckoning Part 1, but I did go back and rewatch the previous six Mission Impossible films. Not really requisite of watching any of these because they're all kind of self-sustained. There are characters that carry over outside of Tom Cruise, but.
It started to like have a storyline in the last few, I think, but it's like it's so secondary to just like you're there to
Yeah,
see the cool shit happen that.
there's actually like having just watched all like I watched all six of them over the last 6 days, and there is a storyline from three through six. Like it is very like I mean it is the main piece of three, right? Like his wife gets kidnapped, or his girlfriend gets
Yeah.
kidnapped, and
You're
that is like. From there, like they tie that all the way through six in like different subtle ways. Like it ends up, Jeremy Renner's character, he has joined on the team. He joins the team in four, and he was evidently the security detail that was there for Ethan Hunt's wife when she gets taken, like, but not taken, like they faked her death. And so like that's there, and like it there's this like tie all the way till the end of six where Michelle Monaghan shows back up again.
Yeah, I remember that they tried to. Yeah, but
I think they put a
it's
bow on that at the end of
yeah,
that one.
it's not like you could pretty much watch any one of those though and not
Yes.
need to know any of that. Like
Yeah, and
that's the thing
it's
about it. Like.
yeah. There's characters that tie together. There's a through line, for Tom Cruise's main character, but they're James Bond movies, just
Yeah.
with Tom Cruise. Each one kind of can be taken on its own, and they're a ton of fun. Like every single one of them. Even I don't love two, but it's like even that one is fun. Like and.
I really I own the box set. I own them all. I gotta be honest, I don't think I've ever sat all the way through one and two.
One, I think,
It's so
is
different. They don't feel like
yeah.
the new ones.
One, I love one, but it is very much a tribute to the original series. And like it plays itself a little more tightly than like they become big action movies with three. Well, even with two, like John Woo's action is just outlandish different. And yeah, it's nonsensical different. In a way. Like it's completely goofy. And then with J.J. Abrams 3, like things start to get a little more serious and ramp up.
And then was it after 3 that they brought McQuarrie? Has he been doing all of them since, or so was there someone else?
McQuarrie wrote 4. He wrote Ghost Protocol, but Brad Bird directed that one.
Oh yeah, that's right, that's right. But it really became a stunt showcase from there on. Like,
yeah, that was when he like actually climbed that giant skyscraper.
Awesome scene, yeah.
I rewatching that, I was like, and people like go like they swear by Ghost Protocol, saying it's like their favorite, and like I rewatched it, I was like, it's good, it's a very good film, but there's just something off about it for me. And I think that's really like the it is. It's Ethan, and then three new people. Like Benji's in 3, but he's not really a main person in it. And so there's like these three people that you're not really familiar with. Like Luther's not there. Nobody else is has tied over. It's missing something, I think. But that's all corrected with 5 and 6, which are near perfect action films. I think like they're so good.
They're kind of my favorite. My personal favorite is 3, but like then it would be like Rogue Nation and Fallout.
3 has the best villain.
For sure. I think that's why.
Although, like the villain in 5 and 6, which is the same one technically, he's pretty good, but he is not Philip Seymour Hoffman. Henry Cavill in 6 is pretty good as like the henchman type dude. Like he's really good.
Sorry. I don't know if you had more to say or whatever, but so many reviews are saying that the new one is like the best one yet. Which is like that's setting me up.
I'm really excited for it. I could wait till the weekend. I was like, nope, I'm just gonna go right after work tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah, like go see it. It's the first screening they're running. I was like, it's on IMAX. And that was Oppenheimer comes out the week after, and that's gonna take IMAX screens. And I was like, I think I wanted to see this on the biggest screen possible.
I am going. IMAX. Nice. So I have to wait a few days, but I'm going like 37 miles away to get to I don't have a IMAX screen in my time. I'm ridiculously excited. This is it. This is what we've been waiting for.
Yeah. I've never been disappointed in a Mission Impossible film, and like they've all been ramping up more and more over the last few, so super excited for that. I saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Indiana Jones 5, directed by James Mangold. Harrison Ford back as Indy. Seems like it's getting, it's fresh, I think, according to Rotten Tomatoes, but like it's in like that barely region.
It got slammed in early reviews. Like, I think it was premiered at Cannes Film Festival or something. Yeah. And like the critics there did not go for it at all, which I think really hurt it, because a lot of people that are going to see it are at least enjoying it. Like, it's just like the early critics like damned it in a way.
Yeah. And it's weird, 'cause I'm not, it's at 69%. So that's pretty good. Like,
yeah.
70%
rush.
It feels like an Indiana Jones movie. I don't know what they really wanted, and they play into Harrison Ford's age. Like he's not the Indy that you probably remember from The Last Crusade or Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's old now, and it does take away a little bit of I don't think it takes away anything from the film. It just, he is not the same. He's not in the same condition. He can't be doing the same thing. So he is not always, fighting everybody, but he was never like Indiana Jones as a character is not like, I'm going to take on an army of people. Like you know, like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. He's somebody that like finds a solution. Normally he's like skirting around the edge. He's almost always getting caught in some way, having to find a way out of it. And that this captures all of that really well. It goes a little goofy at the end. I won't spoil what happens, but I know people are like kind of upset with that. But also, all of these films go goofy. Like Raiders has the
it's true.
Has the Ark of the Covenant and melting Nazis' faces. You have with the Blood of Kali and the Temple of Doom. People getting their hearts ripped out.
Yeah, the supernatural is real, actually, and
yeah.
It goes to that next level. I know where this one goes too.
Yeah, like, spoiled, but this takes like a real artifact, like a real historical artifact, and it attaches some mysticism to it, and it's a bit goofy, but I think it works and it's fun. And I came out of there like really enjoying it. I thought it was a nice send off for Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones. I'm sure Disney is not going to kill Indiana Jones, although it's not doing the numbers that I think Disney wanted. But also, I don't know what you were fully expecting here. Like it was never going to make $1 billion.
It kind of had to. I mean, Lord only knows what they spent on the marketing, but I mean, it's. I don't know. I don't know where it's at worldwide, but it was a bad opening for it at the very least.
Yeah. It only made $60 million, domestically here. Where are we at right now? Indiana Jones worldwide is $249 million. So it's like not great.
Yeah. After
2 weeks.
It's like, will it hit its budget? And then again, you have the whole marketing budget, which was probably just as big.
Yeah. Massive, I'm sure.
Maybe they
shouldn't have spent $200 million.
I think, you know, and I don't think its failure is quite due to reviews. I mean, the reviews did not help. Right. But I do think that maybe they overestimated how much people wanted Indiana Jones back.
100%.
I think a lot of generations younger than us don't know who he is. Because, you know, he hasn't been kept in the public like Star Wars has. Like, Star Wars has always kind of had something. And Indiana Jones had that one movie in, what, 2008 or something? A long time ago now. People didn't like that one. So it's like.
2008. So, what, 15 years ago? And before that, it was like 15 years before.
So if you're like a 20 year old. This might be mean nothing to you. It'd be like watching. It'd be like us being excited for a movie, like a new movie from the '50s. Like, you know, if we were kids, like, okay, I guess. Like, I don't know what this is. So I think that's part of it. I don't know.
But I think if you are an Indiana Jones fan, I think this is plenty fun, and you'll have a good time with it. But
I will give my take. I will get to it.
And one final movie before we move on to our double feature. Movie you saw, Jeff, No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence, directed by Gene Stupnitsky, who did
Good Boys.
Good Boys, which is a funny, raunchy kid comedy, but raunchy. This is raunchy in a different way. I ended up really liking it. It's a weird premise, just in general.
Very 80s premise. Like, it's the type of thing you would do in the 80s. Nowadays, it feels like something you shouldn't touch.
Yeah, like, I was like, this is surprising. My wife was like, she's like, I liked it. It's funny, and like, that, you know, there's, you know, the characters are nice, like, but both the main boy character, Percy, and Jennifer Lawrence's Maddie, like, they're both nice people, and they're flawed, but like the damn premise of it with Matthew Broderick's as the guy's dad and his mom hiring somebody basically to fuck him before he goes to college. Just, it's weird.
Like, it's weird. Today's, I appreciate it. I appreciate that I went for it, and we're gonna do a sex comedy, and we're gonna have like this kind of risque premise. And I liked that.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it works because they they don't play it just for like the sex gags. Both Maddie and Percy are people, and they're portrayed that way, and like why they're doing things, and they both have like, you know, heart to them, and you can kind of get behind both of them. So like I liked it a lot. I think the trailers make it out to be a little more raunchy, funny than it is.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I think like the, you know, the serious bits helps sell the movie, but yeah, I liked it ultimately. I hope it's doing well.
It did pretty good. It didn't have a $300 million budget was the key.
weird how that makes for success. Like Insidious this past weekend made 30 some million, and
that's a success. Yeah.
Off a $15 million budget. Like you win there.
No Hard Feelings is doing just fine. I don't think it's gonna be like a $100 million comedy type of situation, but it's doing fine. And yeah, I like the performances from both of them are really good in it too. Like Jennifer Lawrence is really good at this type of comedy. The kid is good as well. But yeah, the one thing that you kind of touched on that I think some people didn't love is like the lesson learned part goes on too long. Like the serious part comes a little too early, and we could have had the hijinks go on a little longer. I didn't really think about that myself when I watched it. I just kind of enjoyed it throughout, but I could see what people are saying.
Yeah, there's like a moment, and then I think the film kind of goes on for another 20 minutes or so before it kind of ends. And I think people probably wanted a little more haha.
There's funny a scene. Stuff. There's a scene on the beach though early on. It's just so funny. Yeah. It's kind of like worth it right there. Like just to see that, I saw it on like a Friday night or a Saturday night with, you know, it wasn't a packed theater, but it, you know, good crowd. Everyone's laughing at that. Like that was fun.
And then the there's a scene towards the end just where she's like, no, that was my thigh.
Yeah. That got a laugh too.
The line gets a laugh, but it's like actually a really sad scene, like the way it plays out. Like it's just a shame. And I did not realize that Matthew Broderick was the dad until the very fucking end. I was like, he looks super familiar.
Because he doesn't look like Ferris anymore. He's got like long gray hair.
Right. He's got this long hair. It's like he looks familiar, like some character actor or whatever. And then Matthew Broderick came up on the screen during the credits, and I'm like, holy shit.
We're getting old.
And my wife was like, yeah, he doesn't look young anymore because he's not. Like, he's got to be 60 something at this point. So,
yep.
Yeah. But go see that. And I think there's another raunchy comedy that just came out, Joyride, that I'm hearing good things about. So
yeah, and I'm also looking forward to that Strays one coming out.
Oh, that looks hysterical.
That always gets like reaction from the trailer in the theater. So I can't wait for that.
Very, very good trailer.
Like, please bring back the. I hope this is like a trend that continues. I want the raunchy comedy to come back.
Yeah. And Red Band trailers to sell them too.
Yes.
I think that's what sells that Strays one.
Yeah. Very well,
like go bite his dick off. All right. Let's jump into it, Jeff. It's my defacing of Pride Month. I am sorry to everybody. We got a pair of movies here. So Vam from 2021 and Death Drop Gorgeous from 2020. I don't really have I'm going to go in the order I watched them. So, okay. And I think the same way. I think it's the same way you watched them. So
yeah.
We'll start with So Vam first.
A lot's been happening lately, and I feel like I need to tell you this is kind of personal.
Wait, I know you're gay. We all do. Yeah, but
did you know vampires are just a racist construct?
Serious?
Totally. Take Dracula, for instance. It's literally about an illegal immigrant causing trouble and taking the woman.
You know who we are. I know the feeling. I mean, I am stuck in a village full of a bunch of angry peasants who want to kill me.
What are you doing here?
And you know what they never told you in school? Bram Stoker was queer. He was so afraid of his own desire that he had to turn it into an evil vampire.
Chill out. You look like you need a drink.
You were dying. I brought you back. We're not gonna hurt you.
You're a vampire. I want to report a missing person.
This is how we live. I know it's a lot to take in. Relax, have fun and mingle.
Where have you been? I thought you'd been killed or kidnapped or something like this.
I'll tell you everything. Just come with me.
Being a vampire is awesome.
It's 2021, directed by Alice Mackey. 73 minutes. It is a movie about a queer kid who is kind of getting bullied, and there are vampires in the world, and he ends up kind of getting seduced by one, but saved by some other ones. And he has to kind of learn how to be a vampire, and then also deal with these other queer bashing vampires. This is about as low budget as you can get. Maybe not as low budget as you can get. We'll see what Jeff says about Death Drop Gorgeous, but it is not this. This is amateur hour. The film is super, super amateur.
Everything about it is amateur.
Yeah. Directing, the camera work, I kind of like the soundtrack. I thought that they actually do an okay job with the music in this. Special effects for a vampire movie are atrocious.
When you get some, like, I remember it was like a face melting scene.
Yeah, there's a face melting scene.
It's so fake. Like the eyeballs look like.
There's a scene where one of the vampires burns, and like it's just like they added some CG flames.
really cheap early YouTube special effects type thing. Like, yeah, it's just like these terrible looking flames.
Yeah. I mean, there's not much of a story here outside of like this kid gets bullied and then becomes a vampire, and you know, and he's gay. Like that's really the theme.
They're gonna go after the bullies and only go after people who deserve it. Like there's a scene where they go to like one of those re-education camps where they're supposed to like get the gay out of you.
Yeah, I thought that was a funny scene in like the conceptually for it. It was like we're gonna go to this like queer camp. And we're gonna attack the camp masters that are.
It's so. She's like, they're like standing off to the side watching this like this
it re-education happen, yeah. thing,
yeah. And he just like decides to run right at them. Like, there's nothing to it. The other thing, anytime there's like violence in this movie, for the most part, like again, like you do get like the melting faces, the one part. But like, for the most part, the way this director does the action is someone bares their fangs, they're like facing the camera, and then they like lunge at the camera, and that's it. That's your action scene. Like you see,
yeah, then the vampire. Then it cuts to like something else, like where it's over at that point.
That's pretty much how it does it. I mean, that's how they did the climax of the movie, I think.
Oh, kind of.
I think you can kind of see them picking at the. Whatever, dude. This is. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean that's the plot though. Is like there's not much to touch on point by point. It's just like this kid gets bullied, and then there's vampires, and now he's a vampire, and now he has to fight back against the bad vampires. But also his friend gets kidnapped. But like, I don't know. There's like there's a drag queen element to it, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's just like,
both of our movies tonight have gratuitous extended drag queen like show scenes.
Yeah.
That, like, are there for no reason? Like,
but why can't at least explain it with the next film? Right, like
it takes place at the next film takes place. This is like this is a 73-minute film, and we get a full drag performance early on in this. You're just like,
it's a 5-minute performance. Like,
what is this doing? It's like we're not moving. We're not cutting between it and other things that are happening in the club. Like, that could work, but the movie just stops, points a camera at the stage, and we get to watch the performance, and it's like. It's just there because, you know, she wanted to put it in the movie, I guess. I don't know.
And I mean, I guess it's implied that the main character, Kurt, is he wants to be a drag queen. But they never build off of that at all. Like,
no, instead, it just builds to we have to kill the old head vampire because he's bad or something. Like,
yeah,
I didn't really catch what his. Like, why he was bad all of a sudden, but they decided he was bad. kill him, and it's, like, uneventful.
It's just this dude that wears a cowboy hat, and I think it all takes place in, like, England, so it doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, the whole premise of these vampires is, like, okay, well, we can't, like, we're gonna get rid of, like, bad people, but we can't really reveal ourselves, and we can't draw attention, although they're drawing plenty of attention by, like, killing bullies. In mass, like, they're not just killing like a one here or there. Like, we're gonna off like six of them at once.
Yeah.
And you got this other vampire who's like the guy who made the good vampires, I guess, and he's just like seducing people like a vampire does so he can feed on them. He's not really painted as bad outside of like I'm going to eat innocent people, but that's what vampires do. Like, it's not really painted as like why they're doing that, except until he turns like these ones that are like, we don't like Kurt because he's gay and we want to pick on him. So I'm going to make them vampires. So now you have like homophobic vampires. There's a concept here that I think works. Like, as vampires, like, we're going to do good. Like, we've been made into this monster, but we're going to do good in the world by getting rid of bad people that like prey on those that are not as fortunate and are.
Yeah, unfortunately,
not executed very well at all.
I don't think that's a new idea either.
It's not.
A lot of vampire stories are like built around like, oh, I have to feed, but I'm gonna like,
yeah,
box people that deserve it.
And a lot of vampire stories are, and they kind of call it out in this, like, that, you know, vampire stories are queer generally. Like, they tend to have like queer vibes to them and queer overtones. And
the director here, her bright idea was to just like take that subtext and make it text. And
just like spell it out for you. Yeah. Like, Bram Stoker was gay. You know that, right? Like,
and it's not just because she did that, but it's just like the results to everything here are disastrous. Like, it's just, and I guess like I should say that I read that this director was 17. And so it almost feels bad to like pick on, because it's like, yeah, if she wrote this, I don't know. You know, I can see a 17-year-old coming up with this. Like, if this is about school projects, I'm her teacher, I'm going to give her a B or something, because, you know, hey, you made a movie. Good for you. Almost barely a movie. They stretch out for like 10 minutes just to make sure that you could call it a movie at the end. Cause like after they kill the big vampire, that we just get more scenes. Did you remember the final scene? It's like Kurt and his boyfriend are watching a movie, and they drag in a victim to feed on, and Kurt is so embarrassing. Kurt goes, "You know, sometimes I just miss a pizza." So, oh God, what a terrible!
Yeah, they bring in like a neo-Nazi or something like to feed on him. They just have him like off on the side of their living room.
Yeah.
I did not know that she was 17. I should have it's hard to actually get any information on this film, and
nobody's seen it. Yeah, there's like 2 reviews of it online. Like,
I blame Shudder for that. I don't blame Alice Mackey. You know, if she was 17 when she had filmed this, which was just 2 years ago, so she's only 19 or 20 now. Like, she's not a seasoned director by any sense. But I blame Shudder for like putting this in like one of the prime spots.
What were they just like, we need a queer horror section, and what could we get for like a dollar? Is that I don't understand.
I almost feel that that's what it is. And like, I feel that's like a shit. There are plenty of queer horror films that
they have some on there that are good. Yeah. Like, or, you know, better than this.
And this was in like their, like when I looked both on, the Shudder app and on the web. And like, it was like in the first 10 that you look up on their listing. And it's like, that's one that would immediately people would click on because it's one of those first few.
It's, I mean, good for her for somehow selling it to Shudder. I really wonder what they paid for it.
It could have been much. I feel bad for her because like, we're sitting here trashing her film, but
we might be the first podcast to cover her film though.
Yeah. And look, I think that, given some time to, work out her writing and execute a little better, she probably can be fine at this. It's just, it is, as you said, it feels like a student project, like a first attempt at something.
Yeah.
And somehow it just ended up on a major horror streaming app.
Yeah.
And I'm watching a trailer for her second film, which just came out. It's only 80 minutes long. Like, the trailer looks significantly better than the last one. So,
yeah.
So she's improved somewhat, it looks like, at least in the trailer. But yeah.
He's got that Shudder money now.
Yeah.
You could go from a budget of $100 to a budget of $2,000 or whatever.
I will give it. I'll give the film this, and maybe you disagree. But compared to Death Drop Gorgeous, I think the sound quality in Sobam is significantly better. It seems like she at least knew how to like mic up her cast so that they don't sound like they're coming through a tin microphone.
I will maybe concede that, but like, I also think that could work to Death Drop's favor and making it feel like a nasty old slasher.
Sure. But we're going to get over there in a second, but, where do you end with Sobam, Jeff?
I think we found the bottom for me. I think this is the worst movie that we've ever watched. And, it's hard to be mean about it because, it feels like something that someone who is interested in making films made, and, it feels like written by someone who's very young and directed by someone who has no clue what they're doing and no money. And, like, usually they like to celebrate people going and making their own things and doing it outside of the system, but like, it's just this, everything about, like, I can't think of a nice thing to say about it. Like, I would have turned this thing off immediately if we weren't watching it for the show. There's just nothing here. Like, it's short. But like, the entire time felt excruciating because there's just, the acting is terrible. It's so blandly, like, just feels like a shitty YouTube video or something. Like, the production value on it, like, it I guess I liked the bisexual lighting that they did, but it's every fucking movie does that. Like,
it does have good purple and pink lighting.
But there's nothing here. There's nothing at all. Like, there's no... This is not even something that I could see people watching for the camp value of it. Because it's too earnest. It's too... It'd feel mean just making fun of someone who was trying to make a movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like not one of those things that you would watch as a bad movie to make fun of, because it just... There's no joy in even doing that here. So to me, this is a 1 out of 10, Chris. This is like...
Wow, Jeff Jones.
This is the pits. I don't think I've ever pulled out 1 out of 10, but this is it.
I did not hate it quite that much. It is, as Jeff said, it is not good. It is very bad. I guess I'm a little more forgiving of its low quality. I'm going to end up at a 3 here for it. That's not good either. So, but yeah. So
Vam, I recommend.
No, and. Yeah, and shame on you, Shudder, for like featuring this in your queer horror section. Our next film, Death Drop Gorgeous, 2020 film.
Are you ready to have a blast?
You, me, we're going out on the town.
Where are you going tonight?
The outhouse's Halloween party is their biggest of the season.
Oh, you didn't hear?
Just a heads up, but there is a guy that's gonna meet us there at the bar.
What have you got?
You little slut.
Help!
Get a new job. Rent's coming up.
You want your job back.
Tony, I'll take any shift you can give me.
Tuesday! Tuesday with Gloria Hall!
You're gonna be working at the same bar as Janet.
Who are you? Mirror, mirror on the wall. Why even bother asking?
She's so much prettier than me, it's not fair.
Bitch.
You can always find beauty in tragedy.
Kill for your skin.
Hiya, O'Hara.
The body count of gay men continues to rise in Providence.
4 dead bodies? You think people ain't gonna talk?
Whether you like it or not, it looks like we got a serial killer on our hands.
People at your bar are dead, and that could have been me.
We could be next.
Any more questions, Detective?
Watch the teeth.
Do me a favor.
Nail that death drop.
I've never done a split for an empty room.
I always finish my number.
Boo, it's the vampire.
It is credited as being directed by 3 people. Sure. Michael Ahern, Christopher Doppel, and Brandon Paris. They are also all credited as the writers. This is some movie takes place in a drag bar where drag shows happen. And it takes a while for me to even understand what the fuck was going on with this film. But ultimately, it is also kind of like a vampire type movie, just where one of somebody here is killing people so that they can rejuvenate their youth.
Is that what you got? I had a trouble understanding their motive other than they were old and bitter.
Yes. So, yes. And that's why, like, it was like, what is going on? None of this makes fucking sense up until, like, the final, like, the finale portion of the final action sequence. She kind of, like, it is the drag queen there, the villain of the film, who we haven't seen because weirdly it's shot like a giallo, like where the killer is always shown with just like black gloves or off camera, like you don't ever actually see them.
Yeah.
So it's like a mystery of who's doing it. But at the end, we find out it's this one drag queen, and they've been killing people, and they are younger looking in that scene. Like they have done some mystical energy, killing people like Elizabeth Bathory, bathing in their blood or whatever.
Did I miss this younger. Completely? Is that what she says? Like I swear, like I was like, I didn't catch that at all.
Yeah, like the guy, the main character, Dwayne, he's like confronting her name is Gloria Hole.
Yeah.
He's confronting them in like the basement of this other bar or whatever. And, yeah, like she, it's kind of like, he's like, look, you look fabulous again. You've gotten rid of everybody. Like, there's nobody to top you now because one, you've killed them all and you look great again, just move on. And she doesn't want that. So, I think you might have missed that at the end.
I remember her long, she gives a long like rant, you know, yeah. where she's kind of telling you her motives, and like what I basically got out of it is she was just mad that time had passed her by. There was a new generation coming in. She didn't like them. You know, she wasn't the featured, you know, act anymore.
And
all I got out of it. Like I didn't get that she was like, you know, somehow stealing their youth or something.
Yeah. Well, and that I like tied it together with the poster for the film, which is like, I'll kill for your skin.
Okay.
So, like obviously some subtext being missed here.
I missed it. Yeah.
It's not done well at all. So I have some notes on this one. I did not have notes on Sovam because there wasn't a lot there.
Yeah.
As I said, this was giving me bad amateur Guile vibes. Like, the whole thing is just bad amateur vibes. But
yeah,
like, the audio is bad. The cinematography isn't great. The acting is, I think it's worse than Sovam in some cases. But this has the positive of some of the kills are fun. Like,
it has a cool. For stuff, there's an app in this movie called Pounder.
Yes,
which is, you know, Grindr. And there's a part early on where there's just a random guy. He's not really a character in the movie, but he's like on Pounder, and he's talking to, you know, our killer. But, you know, he thinks he's meeting up for a blowjob. He's like, quick blow and go. And they tell him to like go in their backyard at this address. And go, like, I forgot what they say, like, go in the bulkhead or something. It was like,
yeah, it's this door, like
a cellar door.
Yeah, that you would climb down in to get into the basement.
Ah, that's some scary vibes right there.
Yep. But, I'm not doing that.
But he's got, you know, he's drunk and he wants the blowjob, and he walks in and there's a glory hole.
He just sticks his dick right in.
You see his dick, and yeah. Then you see like a meat grinder. And you see the meat grinder destroy his dick.
Yeah.
And then they show him like fall down on the floor after his dick has been completely gnarled away, and you see like the blood shooting out. And to me, that's something.
Yep. And then I will give it this. So like that by itself, that gore is pretty good. It's you know, it's amateurish, but it's like it's inventive enough that like they're trying something here.
I thought that kill was like pretty good. Like, yeah, I thought that, you know, for a low budget, the effects were pretty good.
I love the transition from that. So like the guy is on the ground, blood spurting out of where his grinded up dick used to be. It transitions to a sausage cooking.
Oh yeah, yeah. The two like the main guys making
breakfast. Yeah, they like transitions to them having breakfast and like
and that's their breakfast. Sausage. It's just sausages. He just throws sausage on the plate.
It's a pretty funny transition. And I think that some of the other kills are like, you know, the way they work them out, like it's like a knife through a stage door at one point. He slits the throat of somebody, like
the massage table where they slit the throat.
That was good.
Throat slitting. Although, like, that's another one, because we're doing the giallo thing. He's getting the massage, and you're getting massaged with like these black leather gloves. Wouldn't you like question like
being massaged by murder gloves? What is going on here? Yeah, it's nutso. And there's another one. It's not actually. It's like because it's low budget, they can't actually do this one super well. But it's this guy in a gimp suit that I think he calls him like dog or something like that. And he ends up getting run over by a car, and it cuts to like just like the insides of the guy like laying on the ground.
I'm just laughing at the fact that that character existed, because the club owner, by the way, who I find pretty funny in this, he's like this loudmouth, like kind of Italian.
Tony Two Fingers.
Yeah, and he keeps this guy as a dog in his office. And everyone just acts like it's kind of normal.
So at one point he calls somebody, and I think it's like the first guy from the meat grinder. I think he ends up in the dumpster somehow outside the club. So they call the cops, and these two cops show up, and like he bribes them. But yeah, like this dog guy is just in the corner, like barking. Shit.
I don't know. It made me laugh.
The drag queens' names are pretty great. I think there's Gloria Hole, Janet Fitness, Audrey Hartburn. Those are decent.
We basically covered what this movie is. It's a slasher kind of giallo mystery.
Yeah,
we find out who the killer is. But do you want to talk about the ending? Because I don't understand the ending. Did you get it? Like he's about to bash her head in, and then it cuts to 6 months later, and he's the club owner now, and then she's out on the road with Janet or whatever. Like, what the fuck happened there? Did you get that? Am I missing something?
Now I'm confused. Like, yeah, I think I did.
Like, I thought
Janet died. I could have sworn Janet died.
He's on the road with some other girl, but like. It goes from the big confrontation between our main character and Gloria Hull, and yes. She's on the floor, and he's holding a thing over her head. He's about to bash her head in. She's like, go ahead and finish the fucking number, you know, like, kill me. And then it just cuts to 6 months later. He's the club owner, and she's on the road. What the fuck happened? I don't understand. I don't get what I'm supposed to take away from that. Like, what, did he decide to let her live? Why would he do that? And then how did she not go to prison? Like, I don't understand. Like, I genuinely have no idea what was happening at the end. I was hoping you had some sort of insight here.
Okay, so so maybe I'm missing some context too. I took that as two of the other drag queens were out on the road.
No.
It very well could have been Gloria Hole.
She says we're going to live our life on the lam. She says in this final scene. So I was like, how did you go from almost dead to you're living on the lam? And how is he the son of the nightclub? Like, it makes zero sense. Like,
okay. Well, I'm putting it together now. So Gloria has Tony. Like, that's who she's killing at the end. Like, and Dwayne has shown up. Maybe, and they don't explain this in the 104 minutes of this movie that he sides with Gloria, takes over the club ownership somehow, and lets her leave.
Like, I mean, I feel like they could have
added four said more something, minutes.
Anything to make that work? I was baffled by the end.
And I didn't quite won. I was kind of done with this movie.
You're hating life at this point, yeah.
Here's like, I just found this the other note I wrote. found it aggressively boring outside of the kills. Like, at least Sovam is really short. Like, this goes, like, in between the kills, there's just long stretches of nothing happening. Like, you're watching drag performances, you're watching the guy bartend. Every once in a while, there's these two weirdo cops that are, like, I don't know. Between them and the guy who's playing Tony Two Fingers, like, they are in a completely different movie from all of these drag queens and Dwayne. Like, they are overacting at a, like, to a point where I think you found it amusing.
Yeah.
Like, I can't with these people, man. Yeah, I mean, essentially, it is a murder mystery where the mystery is just bluntly revealed, and then I think we've just come to the conclusion that it doesn't even explain itself in how.
I think that, you know, you're giving an explanation. It doesn't. I don't know.
I don't know that, if that's, yeah.
The movie doesn't give that explanation. The movie gives no. It's just 6 months later, and everything has changed, but I don't understand why. Like, I whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I felt after watching both of these movies, was whatever. This one, I mean, being longer than Sovam, has multiple extended drag performances, so there's that, I guess. And I will give this that I think those drag performances are shot better than the one in Sovam.
I think the villain here is better than the villain, or whatever is supposed to be the villain in Sovam, the guy that decides that they have to kill at the end.
There's at least a reasoning. Like,
he goes for it.
Yeah. Like, I understand what Gloria is doing. Like, I understand her motive for killing people. It makes sense. Like, it's structured better, I think, in that sense. It's just everything in between that is just so atrocious. But it does have that dick grinder scene, so it
does have that. That's something. That's not nothing.
And it does have Pounder. That was a...
And it has a dog boy in the corner. It has a loudmouth club owner. Like, these little things add up, I think, Chris.
Maybe. I think you may be maybe swaying me here a bit, because... Yeah, at least this one, I think... You said it with the last one, right? Like, it's... Sovam is a movie that I don't even think you can watch to make fun of, because it would just feel mean-spirited.
Yeah.
This one, I think, is... There's enough camp in it that, like, it's bad, and it deserves the mockery thrown at it, but you can at least find something enjoyable to, like, sit around and have a beer and laugh at.
Where I'm landing on it.
I think you're right. I think you have turn me around on this. I don't think either one is really worth watching.
No. No, I think they're both bad movies.
And I wish there was more, like, to talk about plot-wise with either one, or like, cinematography-wise or soundtrack-wise. Like, they're just bad amateurish movies. But I think I am coming around to your line of thinking, Jeff, that Death Drop Gorgeous at least has something redeemable about it.
Yeah.
It's bad, though.
It's bad. It's a bad movie, but it's a bad movie in the way that you would want to watch a bad movie. Like, Sovam doesn't have that. You can't watch it as a fun bad movie. This you could.
Yeah, like, there's at least some fun here.
This could be on Red Letter Media's Best of the Worst. I could see them pulling clips from this, laughing like jackals and fucking making fun of it. I probably know it could have been on an episode of it. I do watch that show sometimes. I think this movie, like, has a sense of humor. It kind of knows what it is. And again, it has some gore and stuff. It's bad, and it way overstays its welcome.
Way overstays. I'll also give it this. For the premise of So Vam as being like this queer horror film, the queerness isn't, it's not part of it. Like,
it's so earnest. It doesn't have a sense of humor like this does. I mean, it does. It tries, but this is like, but this gets its audience. Like,
the queerness, I think, is at like the heart of this, right? It's about, you know, drag queens and, you know, an aging drag queen that is looking for a way to recapture, you know, their fame, their youth. Whereas like the queerness in So Vam isn't, yeah, the main character is gay, and the main vampire, like the good main vampire, is trans, but that's it. Like that's the reasoning. Like it's a gay guy and a trans girl. That's it. Like that's the queerness of that film. Whereas this, like, they play into it. Like, it is, takes place in a drag bar. It is, you know, the main killer is a drag queen who's going out to, you know, recapture their youth in this queer environment. Queerness is at the center of Death Drop Gorgeous, where I don't think it is, like, So Vam, it says it is, but it's really not. It's just a bad vampire movie.
Yeah, and I I was trying to kind of say, I think, is like, it kind of, the humor is more matured here in that it understands like gay humor and stuff, and like, yes. This the other movie is written by someone who's so young that it just feels so earnest, and it's just, you're not like, they think that they're doing something, they think they're doing something in So Vam, but they're doing nothing, and here it's just they're having fun with it.
Yeah, even if the, you know, execution of that fun isn't great, it's like they're at least, the sense of humor is there. They understand what they're doing.
Again, I think this could be enjoyed as a bad movie. It is a bad movie. Don't get me wrong. I'm not coming out positive on this. To me, I gave it a 3 out of 10.
All right. I think I was originally underneath that. But I think that is where I am going to end on this as well.
Sold you on Death Drop Gorgeous.
You sold me on improving my rating of it. And I think, as we all said, both of us during this, that, like, you know, there are some kills in it that are decent. Like, they go for it there. There's at least that aspect of it.
That So Vam doesn't have it. I did end up doing, I didn't end up doing a poll on Twitter because there's no way I was going to find.
No, nobody watched these movies. We are the only two people that have ever seen both of these movies.
I did do it on the Joe Bob group on Facebook and got one vote, Chris.
Which way did that go?
For Death Drop Gorgeous.
All right. That's probably the only one they've even ever heard of.
Hey, I did get, here's some comments I got. Never heard of either of these. Someone said, why do they call it scissoring when it is actually lip syncing? And someone said, flip a coin.
That's fair.
So, I don't know if the scissoring joke was like a quote from one of the movies. I guess maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Although,
it's a good joke.
That's a good joke. I think it's just a lesbian joke, but I don't think it has anything to do with either of these.
True. Alright, well, that was Pride Month. So much for Pride Month.
I'm sorry to our queer friends.
Hey, you might enjoy Death Drop Gorgeous. I would not recommend giving So Vam a shot.
What are we watching this month, Jeff?
For the next episode, we're going to do two erotic thrillers, a genre that was pretty popular in the late 80s and early 90s. And some say they don't make movies like that anymore. Except when they do, we're going to watch two recent examples of erotic thrillers. And unlike my last picks, there are horror elements to both of these. At least as far as I know, I have not seen them both.
Okay.
So from 2021, we're going to watch The Voyeurs, which is available on Amazon Prime. And from this year, we're going to watch Spoonful of Sugar, which is available on Shudder.
Spoonful of Sugar. What was The Voyeurs on?
Amazon Prime. All right. I think it's an Amazon Prime movie, so it should be on there for free.
Prime and Shudder. There we go. The Voyeurs and Spoonful of Sugar, double dose of erotic thrillers.
Were you a fan of this genre back in the day, Chris?
It's certain films, for sure.
You're a big Basic Instinct boy?
I mean, I don't know, big. But, yeah, like, I mean, that it is a fascinating, like, when you mix sex and, you know, kind of thriller elements, it's interesting. I mean, anytime you mix sex in with things, like, you're going to catch some people's eyes. Especially at that point, I was like a teenager, so yeah.
Yeah. See, I think they're fun movies. I think, like, I watched Fatal Attraction a few months ago. I thought it still held up and was very fun. But also, when those were popular, I was even younger than you, Chris. I was like just hitting puberty.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of erotic thriller. So, but I still think even as an adult, they're fun movies.
I remember I definitely saw Basic Instinct, Fatal Attraction, but also like stuff like Poison Ivy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like those were. And like going back and watching something like Poison Ivy now, it's like this is not as risque as people made it out to be.
It felt like it at the time.
Yeah,
one was probably not as good either anymore.
No, I think that the draw of Poison Ivy, both one and two, I think, is that like it was Alyssa Milano in the first one, and I think it was Drew Barrymore in the second one.
It was, if you flip it,
yeah,
Drew Barrymore was the first, but it was taking someone who was like had not done something like that.
Yeah, right? So it's like, and it was somebody you grew up with, right? Like, like she's my age. Like Drew Barrymore's my age. It's like Alyssa Milano's my age. Like that's like this is cool. Like. she wasn't. She was clearly a little bit older, but like she's portrayed as like being that age. So,
you ever see The Crush with Alicia Silverstone?
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah. All right. So, if you're into the genre, yeah. I think I've seen one of these and I've liked a lot. So, hopefully, we'll have some fun with these.
All right. Well, that'll be coming everyone's way in August. I mean, the two movies we watched this week, this month, are on Shudder. I don't recommend it. But
don't do it.
Watch The Voyeurs and Spoonful of Sugar for us and let Jeff know which one you guys prefer.
Yeah.
We'll be back next month.
Woohoo.